It is not always necessary that the spirit should return to earth to take its first lessons in spiritual progress. Sometimes it is, but not always, by Father Henry Fitz-James, December 30, 1867. Question: Is intellectual force or power only a modification of physical force or power? Scientific men say that electricity, heat, motion, and light are only different expressions of one and the same force or thing. Now, the question I ask is, are all expressions of force, both intellectual and physical, only modifications of the same power? Answer: No, certainly not. You would not consider thought simply a result of electrical motion. If you do, you have mistaken its true character. There is a marked and distinct difference between intellectual and physical power. Question: By the use of what instrumentalities can an individual most rapidly and permanently increase his intellectual activities and force? What special information can the controlling spirit give us on this very important matter? Answer: Knowledge is power, and it can be gained only by earnest thought and earnest endeavor. If you desire intellectual power, you must seek to unfold yourself through all the capacities of your being. A harmonious or well-rounded unfoldment is certainly best. Nearly all our, or I should say your, great minds have been unfolded. Only in one direction, perhaps two or three, and this at the expense of all the others. Jesus possessed a very marked degree of harmonial development. All the capacities of his nature seemed to be rounded into use. He was conversant with the laws of nature in the external world, with the laws of mind, and clairvoyantly went out into the spirit realm. It is impossible to draw any lines by which the spirit, or mind, should be governed with regard to seeking knowledge. It should be sought from every source, and nowhere ignored. You should be willing to allow everything and every mind to be your teacher, and, in turn, you should be willing to teach all things and all minds. Seek to unfold all the latent energies of mind, and, in all directions, be harmonious in your actions, and seek for wisdom from God's eternal volume, that is open for all. By Theodore Parker, January 2, 1868. Question: Is it well to disturb a medium in a circle, who is in a trance, quite unconscious and paralyzed, in order to wake her up? Would it not be best to wait for the same power to release her that placed her in that particular state? Answer: Certainly. There is no power on earth, under certain conditions, that can arouse a medium from a thorough trance condition. It must be done by the same power that passed them into the state. Question: Do the more progressed spiritual beings of our planet have the power to visit any of the other planets of our solar system? And have any of the spiritual entities of any of the other planets of our system been known to come within the spiritual realms of our planet? And, if so, has there ever been an interchange of ideas between such intelligences? 112 Answer: Yes, there are certain far-reaching minds that could no more be content to exist with the simple amount of knowledge that could be gathered from one planet, than they could be content to exist, if it were possible, within the confines of a nutshell. They desire to know all that it is possible for them to know, and finding that they have unlimited freedom in the spirit world, they exercise it, they make use of it. It is not every soul that knows its powers. It matters not whether the soul be clothed with the flesh, or whether it have laid off the flesh, there are very few souls that fully realize the power that God has invested them with. The majority have no idea that they can go beyond the limits of this earth, therefore they never make the attempt. But there are those who tell us they have visited many of the planets besides earth, and have become quite conversant with their conditions. By William E. Channing, January 6, 1868. Question: Is God a power or soul permeating the universe, or a self-existent being, having habitation and personality with inconceivable capacities of knowledge, wisdom, and happiness? Answer: I have no belief in a personal God, except as I believe in God as being personified through every conceivable form. I believe God is a power permeating all mind and all matter, and forever changing all according to his own divine life. Question. Do the spheres exist as separate localities or one world, as the Earth, presenting only a different aspect to different minds, soul gravity and culture determining the society and scenery each one enjoys and earns? Answer. The spheres spoken of by returning spirits are not localities, by any means, but they are conditions of mind, states of being. The spirit world proper has been derived from the spiritual emanations of this world, therefore it is like unto it, only superior to it. Question. If spirits can or are to re-manifest in human form, can they choose as to that form, and to the extent of their past earth experience elect as to their hereditary and intellectual conditions? Answer. The spirit form changes according to the requirements of the indwelling spirit, and according to the powers and capacities of the indwelling spirit. Question. What generally becomes of families in spirit life after a few centuries? Do they clan and cling together as on earth, or separate and become absorbed in the great family of mankind, or spirit kind? Answer. Spirits are gathered together in groups, suiting their needs. Whatever kind of intellectual life I may be attracted to, there I shall gravitate, and what is true in my case, is true in the case of every soul. If there is no natural or spiritual attraction between persons composing earthly families, they will separate in the spirit world. By William E. Channing, January 7, 1868. Question. Will you give a scientific explanation and definition of insanity? Answer. Medical men inform us that insanity is simply an unbalancing of the physical and spiritual forces. They inform us that the cause is seldom found in the physical organism alone, but it is found with the forces that play upon the organs. Therefore it is very hard to know exactly how to treat the different kinds of insanity. They tell us it is a very subtle disease, sometimes appearing to yield to remedial agents, and suddenly rising up again with more vigor than before. Medical men, in the spirit world, not here, inform us that they are doing all it is possible for them to do towards enforcing their ideas of insanity upon the plastic brains of medical men on the earth. Those who are the most susceptible to spirit influences will receive their ideas first. I believe that the foundation of their theory is here, insanity, lying in the imponderable forces, should be treated not as you would treat organic disease, but as you would treat spiritual disease, or a disease running through the imponderable forces of the human body. Magnetism and electricity have been heretofore very little understood. They have been recognized as existences, but their wondrous uses have never been sought out. Now, medical men inform us that magnetism and electricity are the most powerful agents that can be used, if used understandingly, in all cases of insanity, but, inasmuch as medical men have so small an understanding concerning these forces, it would not be safe for them to seek to make use of them till they have learned something more of them. Magnetism and electricity stand as masters over humanity, but when humanity comes to know these agents, humanity will master them, bring out all their uses, and apply them to the needs of the suffering. Question. Can those who know their ancestors have been insane prevent the same defect from expressing itself in themselves by education and self-discipline? Answer. Medical men tell us that it is almost impossible to prevent hereditary insanity, that is to say, unless you know just where to strike, you are very apt to strike in the wrong place. Now, as insanity, as I before remarked, is located upon and through the imponderable forces, it is a most subtle disease, and does not become apparent often until it suddenly bursts upon you in all its fury. Medical men tell us that the seeds of insanity are very frequently sown at conception. Then it is called hereditary. It is transmitted from the ancestors down through a direct magnetic and electric line. If you know that your ancestors have been thus afflicted, the only proper and sure course is, if you wish to stay its progress, to avoid marriage. Medical men tell us that when once the disturbances are in the imponderables of the body, you can very rarely affect them for good, except at the time when they have shown themselves the most violently. When they have reached a certain point, then you are able to affect them, if you know how to apply the agents, generally very successfully. But even if you know that you have the seeds of insanity implanted within your being, you can do nothing towards eradicating them till they have shown themselves outwardly. Now this seems rather hard, but those who seem to understand such things declare that it is absolutely true. By Joseph Löwenthal, January 21, 1868. Question. During my experience of 10 years as a healing medium, I have found many cases of disease induced by the close proximity of spirit friends. And I believe a large amount of the physical suffering with which we meet is traceable in some way to this cause. I would ask if you can give us such an explanation as would help us to guard against such influences? Can we do anything, in conjunction with friends in the spirit world, to prevent so frequent recurrence of these cases? Answer. The only sure method of prevention known to us is this. Make yourself acquainted with the influences by which you are attended, and, through reason, dispel the clouds. If they are injurious to your physical and spiritual well-being, if you reason with them, they will depart. Knowledge is the only safe way by which to reach and overcome all the ills of life. The various churches scattered throughout the land are perpetually sending forth their cry against modern spiritualism, but they know as little concerning modern spiritualism as the snail knows of the stars. Yet they are constantly sending forth their anathemas, expecting thereby to annihilate modern spiritualism. If they would be successful in their cause, they must first seek to understand it, and then they may have some guarantee for success. So it is with regard to all laws in life. You are compassed about by an innumerable cloud of witnesses, unseen attendants. Some there be who come for good, and some for what you call evil. Some come to gain for themselves, others come to give. Some come for the purpose of making themselves better, to find entrance to heaven. Others come expecting to wreak vengeance upon those who have done them ill upon the earth, or whom they fancy have ill-treated them. There are all classes of spirits who visit the earth. It is a great highway, and open to all. Now, then, it behooves you all, as spiritualists, as scientists, as moralists, as Christians, to seek to know concerning the powers by which you are surrounded. Then, if they produce injury to body or spirit, you will know how to repair it, and how to provide against it. Question. Can you, or do you ever dart thoughts into the mind of man, and he at the time be unaware of it? Answer. Certainly, that is a very common occurrence. Mind is constantly giving out of its thoughts, and as constantly receiving from some other mind, and as there. Disembodied spirit has more power than the spirit embodied, and can with greater facility fasten its thoughts upon some other brain. So, in that respect, they are superior to minds in the flesh, and can exercise answer. Greater power over you than you can exercise over them. Question. Is there any other judgment day beside the last day of a man's life here on earth? Answer. Yes. Every day of your lives is a judgment day. Every day which belongs to you as an individual, there is judgment past concerning. All the acts of your lives are passed before the great judgment seat, and each one determined upon. If they are evil, they bring their legitimate results. If they are good, they also bring their legitimate results. An evil tree cannot bring forth good fruit. Whatever you sow, that you will reap. There is no forgiveness for sins. You must pay the uttermost farthing for all the mistakes of life. You will by and by learn that it is well, for, did the great power in the universe suffer you to go without judgment when you make mistakes, you would hardly march on through the wondrous degrees of progress marked out for you as an intelligent spirit. Question. Do we have the celestial body that is spoken of in the Bible as soon as we die? Answer. You have it before you die. It is with you now. It forms an ethereal, mystic covering for the nervous system, and it passes out, or is expelled from the body, by the electrical forces. When the magnetic force has departed, it is the business of the electric force to expel this spirit body, then you are born again. By Reverend George Whitefield, January 21, 1868. Question. What is a proper, and what is an improper question? This was at page 118. Answer. All personal questions would be considered improper, at this place. Question. Under what conditions are spirits able to move ponderable bodies, organic or inorganic, through the atmosphere? Answer. Various conditions are necessary. First, it is necessary to bring the medium in spiritual or electrical rapport with the object you desire to move. Secondly, it is necessary to bring the will of the person who is the prime operator in the case in conjunction with the object to be moved, and with the medium. These three conditions, or parts of one, being perfect, any body, however ponderable, may be acted upon according to the capacity of the power that may be provided by the medium. Under some circumstances, a dry atmosphere is quite necessary, under others, a moist atmosphere seems to be better. Question. It has been said by a certain author that mediums are generally somewhat mistaken with reference to the personal presence of spirits at circles. He states that it is more the reflective than the real presence, like the shadow upon a placid lake. Is that correct? Answer. Under some circumstances it is correct, under others, wholly incorrect. Sometimes the spirit is present, and holds absolute control, in propria persona, of the medium. At other times, the spirit may be thousands of miles away, and yet the medium may be under the control of that spirit. Question. In the petition presented, as I understood, to the divine being, what is the nature of the repentance referred to? Answer. It is a softened joy, which naturally follows the knowledge that we have been mistaken, and that we are now in the possession of truth. This was at page 119. Question. Does not repentance naturally imply that there is something to be repented of? Something we have done wrong, that should be rectified? Answer. So it would seem. Repentance may be called the avenging angel, who deals with us for all the mistakes that we may make in life. Question. What is your opinion with regard to the nature of man? Is it a duality or a trinity? I have heard it said that we are three component parts, body, soul, and spirit. Answer. I believe while you are on the earth you are three in one. You have the physical body, which is the outgrowth of earthly conditions, and you have the spiritual body, which is an outgrowth of your earthly body, and you have the divine life, which is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Question. With reference to repentance, am I to understand that it is a punishment, and not an act on the part of the one who exercises repentance? Answer. Some consider it in that light, but I believe it is a natural result which follows error. We are sorry that we have not seen the better way before, but at the same time we are glad that the light is now with us. This seems to me to be repentance. I have myself repented sorely and sincerely over the errors of my past earthly life, but at the same time I perceive a joy running through my repentance, which I believe to be the glorious light that has lifted me out of the darkness. I do not believe that repentance comes from the great and perfect Father of our spirit, in consequence of our fault itself, but I believe it follows our mistakes of necessity. If we infringe upon the laws that govern physical life, pain is the result, suffering is sure to follow. And so it is with regard to all spiritual things. All spiritual mistakes may be called, I believe, and justly too, infringements upon the spiritual law of our spiritual natures, and to the same extent we must suffer. We may call the suffering repentance, or by any other name. Question. I observe that you call the suffering repentance. I would ask, what is the cause of that? What is the spiritual influence that operates upon our spirit to produce that sorrow and the subsequent joy? Answer. I believe it to be the spiritual light which attends the consciousness of the soul who has attained a better state than the past. I do not know that it is shed from any particular source. I believe it is born of the divine life of our own natures. Question. Are not sadness and suffering essential to the perfecting of the spirit under all circumstances? Answer. I think so, just as much as the storms that sweep over the earth are necessary to the unfoldment of the earth. Question. Can there be any growth without suffering? Answer. I think not. If the most perfect beings that we have any record of were capable of such intense suffering as the record of their lives affirms, what have we the right to infer concerning suffering? Why, certainly, that it is a necessity. It may be called the key that unlocks the gates of heaven, and bids the spirit flee from past shadows. Question. Will this suffering continue to the afterlife? Answer. I have seen the keenest of all sorrow in the spirit world. You have sorrow here on earth, but it is dull and stupid when contrasted with that of the spirit world. Oh, do not be mistaken with regard to your future life. Do not suppose that it is one continuous life of joy, for I tell you it is not. The suicide who seeks to escape the sorrows of earth, hoping to gain the joys of heaven, wakes from a mistaken dream, to find himself ofttimes in deeper sorrow than when on earth. The shadow that belonged to him while here has followed him to the spirit land, and by natural and perfect law he must outlive it. When we know concerning sorrow, we know how to flee from it, but when it is a mystery to us, it lingers around us, and, like the shades of evening, refuses to depart till the morning light of knowledge streams in, and then, by natural necessity, it must depart. By Theodore Parker, January 30, 1868. Question. What relation does mesmerism bear to spiritualism? Answer. It bears a very intimate relation, so intimate, that you can scarcely tell where to divide the two. Mesmerism, or the mesmeric aura, may be called one of the most essential agents by and through which the disembodied or the embodied spirit acts upon any other spirit. Question. A lecturer at Music Hall, Boston, a few Sundays ago, stated that a shower of fresh and various flowers fell upon his bed, on which he was lying, at midnight, in severe weather in midwinter, and that the stems of the flowers appeared as if twisted off, and not cut, and as if torn by a current of electricity, leading to the conclusion that they had been conveyed to him from a warmer climate, where they grew. It has hitherto been supposed by many that such and other productions were immediate formations, composed by spirit power from the elements of our atmosphere. I would ask which process is the true one? Answer. They are both true. Sometimes, under certain conditions, those spirits who are conversant with the science of chemistry are able to form out of the atmosphere, your earthly atmosphere, flowers of different forms, their own spirit forms. A great variety of flowers they are able to create out of the atmosphere. And sometimes we are told that the guardian spirits of mediums bring them flowers from your earthly gardens. They are sometimes twisted from the parent stem by the electricity that is thrown upon them by the spirits who desire to possess themselves of the flower. You should understand that there are many chemists in the spirit world, and they take great delight in making chemical experiments with regard to all the things of this world. They never allow an opportunity to pass without doing something towards informing themselves with regard to the nature of the earth, and its relations to their spirit home. They want to know how much power they can have over all things here, and how much, in turn, you can have over them, what they can do with the vegetable kingdom, the mineral kingdom, and the spiritual kingdom, what they can do with all things here that pertain to mind or matter. So their experiments are constantly going on. Question. How do you explain the word seer, as used by the ancients? Answer. Seer is another term for clairvoyance, or the spiritual condition, a condition in which the spirit can enter the past and future, as well as the present. Question. Did not these seers, being, as you say, wiser than they knew, actually foretell events? Answer. Perhaps so. At all events they were not styled prophets. Question. Is anything impossible with God? This was at page 123. Answer. Certainly to me there is. The breaking of his own law would be an impossibility. He would destroy himself, and annihilate all the forms that are in being. I do not believe that God can step outside of himself. He must always live in his own being. To perform a miracle, according to my idea, he must step outside of himself, he must trample upon his own law, he must totally disregard all that which constitutes the law of life. No, I do not believe it is possible for God to create a world in 6 days, nor in 6,000 years, nor in 600,000 years. No, to me there are many things impossible, even unto God. By Thomas Starr King, February 4, 1868. Question. Is there a devil existing outside of the human mind? Answer. The greatest, the most perfect devil that we ever knew, had an existence in the human mind in that portion of it that is the result of human education. The devil, as an instinctive personality, is a thing of time, a something that has been wrought out through your defective educational system. You are here educated, religiously, morally, intellectually, and physically, and that portion which we call defective, which runs through the whole system entire, is that which has produced this personal devil. It has made his horns, and his hoofs, and all his various appendages, and it has called upon humanity to exercise a fear concerning him, but it is all the result of a false education. Those persons who have never been educated at all in such matters have no thought of a devil. Question. Is not science one of the greatest and most important studies in the spirit world? This was at page 124. Answer. It is the foundation of all true educational systems. It is the only true basis upon which intelligence can rely for information, whether here or there. All spirits, when they become divested of the mortal form, and have risen beyond the prejudices incident to human life, when they begin to desire to know more concerning themselves and their surroundings, at once start off, attended by science, and this attendant never forsakes them. They are never satisfied with any demonstration that is not truly scientific, that cannot be resolved to a clear point beyond dispute. And it would be far better for our religionists of earth, our moralists, and, indeed, far better for all classes of being, would they adopt a similar plan, and investigate therein by science. Let science be the basis of your religion, and worship at no shrine that is not a scientific shrine. When you do this, you will seldom have occasion to look back with regret over the many mistakes you have made. By Theodore Parker, February 6, 1868. We have a few words to say with regard to these letters. The letters placed upon the table for answers by the invisibles, there seems to be, to some extent, a misunderstanding with regard to them. Persons who receive indefinite and vague answers cannot understand why they do not receive clear and satisfactory answers, as their neighbors perhaps may get. The fault, in 9 cases out of 10, lies with themselves. They, not understanding the laws governing in the case, fail to obey them, therefore they are disappointed in their answers. It should be understood that but a very short time, say a few seconds, can be devoted to any one letter, and for this reason, a certain amount of magnetic power is abstracted and used from the medium in the answering of the letters. Those who are in control know just how much can be taken without injury to the subject, and it must be divided according to the demands of each letter. Some require more, some less. But if there is no power by which the letter can be answered, there certainly can be no answer. Now, in order to ensure an answer which will be to any extent satisfactory, each letter should contain only one question, or two at most. and those questions should be of a character that can be answered by someone of the spirit friends whom the writer may have in the world of souls. Many of the questions, we are sorry to say, are of a very frivolous character, pertaining more to the things of this world than to the things of the other, more to mundane circumstances than to the circumstances of the soul. For instance, Mr. B.